Hello and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And Jem, now you've picked a pocket. What am I talking about?
You got to pick a pocket or two.
I mean, I kind of feel it out of professionalness. We ought to restart this podcast, but we're not going to restart
podcast.
We're
going
to press
roll.
Regardless. I've got no idea why I just said that. But, Jem, you've picked a topic. That's what I'm going for.
Uh-huh.
You picked a topic for this week's podcast. Oh, dear, it's gone wrong already. Jem, what are we talking about this week?
Well, we get a lot of stuff about the Romans, but I think it's worth looking at what else is happening in the world apart from beyond the Roman Empire, because there's this complete bias, in particularly in Western Europe, where you've got the Romans who are like the epicenter of civilization, and everywhere else was just a dark, barren land of barbarians picking at their bottoms, basically, and it wasn't like that. Now, there can be no doubt that the Roman Empire was very sophisticated, and it had lots of things going for it, and also lasted an incredibly long time. It is worth mentioning that as well. But there were other civilizations and cultures out there.
Well, that's right. But I mean, the Romans are the important ones. The reason we hear about the Romans, and this is sort of my first jumping off point for this, is why? Because you said to me quite a long time ago, you said to me, you know, really, if you're going to write a history book and it's going to sell a lot, you've got to write about the Romans or you've got to write about the wars. And those are kind of, for some reason, the two hot topics that we get loads and loads of history books about. And all of the, and for some reason, people do have this fascination with the Romans over and above all of their contemporaries. And it's great, but I don't really, if I'm completely honest, understand it. I think nowadays we learn a lot about the Romans because people have had this interest in Romans, and so it keeps building on itself and building on itself and building on itself and building on itself. We teach it in schools because people know about it. We get this impression Roman is important. And I'm not quite sure what it is about the Romans that does give them this historical advantage over some of the other people we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, I mean, there's just, as you said, there's just a bias about this stuff. And the Romans actually came quite late to the ancient world. You know, for example, they really only start becoming a big deal after the Punic Wars. This was when basically northern Mediterranean was ruled by the Romans, and the southern Mediterranean, that was ruled by the Carthaginians. You know, Hannibal, you've heard of them, and Carthage was their capital city. And these two empires basically kept butting up against each other, and there could only be ultimately one winner. In the end, after three separate wars, the Romans managed to sort of win. We're talking about round about 250 BC, give or take. Now, when you compare that to something like the Battle of Thermopylae, that had happened more than 200 years earlier. You know, the ancient Greek civilization predates the Roman civilization by centuries. You want to talk about Egypt? That predated the Roman civilization by thousands of years. So the Romans were actually very late to the party, as it were. And yes, I've just mentioned the Carthaginians, the Greeks, and the Egyptians, and all three of those civilizations were ultimately absorbed into the later Roman Empire. But of course, we all know that the Roman Empire only went so far east, and it kept butting up against the Persian Empire, which had been around for more than 1,000 years before they, you know, they were starting having wars with the newer Roman Empire, and was to last. It didn't lose to the Roman Empire, although it does get tricky. Exactly what do you mean by the Roman Empire? Because there were later wars with the Byzantine Empire. Do you consider that Roman or not? It gets tricky because, you know, we can all kind of agree that the foundation of Rome was round about 700 BC, and what I've just said about it starts becoming a big deal really round about 250 BC, but exactly when do you want to say it ends? Is it the collapse of the actual Western Roman Empire? The Eastern Roman Empire was doing pretty well and pre-existed the collapse of the Western Roman Empire. It gets tricky, but yeah, one thing we can all agree on is the Romans never really marched their way to Tehran or somewhere like that. And that was, you know, the Persian Empire was in pretty good health throughout the entire Roman Empire and covered a huge amount of land and was the crossroads, if you like, between East and West in terms of trade. So there's just one example of another empire that would have considered itself absolutely as culturally as important as the Roman Empire, but we don't talk about it nearly as much.
And this is one of the things, I mean, first of all, important thing to point out is if you got a little bit lost or you felt Jem rushed a little bit through the end of the Roman Empire and how we're not quite sure where the Roman Empire ends and all of this and that, the reason Jem kind of rushed through that is because we have dedicated a whole podcast to that in the past. You can listen to our podcast on when the Roman Empire ended and our discussions as we tried to drill down and actually get to the bottom of when it actually ended. But you're quite right. In terms of time, it's quite hard to see exactly where the Roman Empire ends. But in terms of space, the Roman Empire was a clear political entity. It's not like, you know, sort of we're trying to look at, if we were trying to look, for example, at Christianity, what was contemporary, Christianity is something that spreads out. There's not a clear line of the Christian world versus the non-Christian world. Whereas Roman, when we say the Roman Empire, that is a clearly defined political unit, especially at the height of the empire. So we know exactly where it stretched you and we know exactly what was outside of it. And one of the interesting points that you made there, one of the cultures you mentioned was the Egyptians. And I always find it fascinating that we study the ancient Egyptians in school. I was actually in a school just last week doing a show about the ancient Egyptians. Oh, actually, Jem, I've got to change the subject completely now, actually.
Go on.
I was in a school last week. I know you'll appreciate this. Now, just before I carry on, if you could just all take a moment, if you just listen to my voice, if you don't know what I look like, just have a quick look at the picture on the podcast app. Make sure you can see my face just before I carry on this story, because this is quite important. Have a quick look at my face. I was in a school last week. I was doing this show about the ancient Egyptians. I was telling people all about the ancient Egyptians. And I was there in my flouncy shirt and, you know, my hair all loose and everything. And I was doing my knife juggling at the end of the show, as I always do. And I came out and all the staff in the office were in fits of laughter as I walked into the room, and one of the teachers said to me, "We just had one of the reception class children, one of the little ones." She said, "You've really scared that child." And I said, "Oh." She said, "Yeah, they looked through the window at the end of your show." And I said, "Oh," and they sort of saw me standing like a berserker with the knives. And they went, no, it wasn't the knives. She said, "That child looked through the window. She saw you doing your show. She went back to her classroom. She walked up to the teacher, this little poor little child standing there, absolutely terrified, and just went, 'Miss, I've just seen Jesus.'" So that was my day. yeah. So, anyway.
You're the right age. You've got the traditional long hair. You've got a bit of a beard. Yeah, with
the flouncy shirt as well. Yeah, it really worked. But anyway.
What do you like of carpentry?
That's where it all falls apart. Yeah. And actually, yeah, that's exactly what I am like at carpentry. It does just all fall apart.
Right.
But anyway, back to what. Yes, Egyptians. That's right. So we study Egyptians and we study the Romans. If you went to anyone and said to them, "Cleopatra," a lot of people would get, "Oh, Antony and Cleopatra, Julius Caesar, the Nile," you know, sort of all this stuff with Cleopatra and the Romans. And yet, when we're taught about the Romans and the ancient Egyptians in school, we are taught about them as two clearly distinct empires. And also in the way it's taught, you kind of get this impression they are two entirely distinct periods of time as well. And obviously the start of the ancient Egyptian era, that runs back further than the start of Rome, but there is this crossover. There is this time when the two run concurrently, contemporary. We have the crossover, and yet I do it myself, even though I know there is this big moment with Antony and Cleopatra and Julius Caesar and everything else going on there. The rest of the time, ancient Egyptians and the Romans are kept in entirely separate boxes in my head. And it's this problem we always have when we start to put stamps and we start to put definitions within history, that we lock the Romans in a box and we say, right, that was the Roman period. Boom, we're done. It's the Romans. And we get into our heads this idea of, you know, you know, I will mention, if I'm doing a show about the Romans, I will mention them invading the Gauls and invading the Dacians and coming over and invading Britain. And yet it's really difficult to step back and go, right, but who were the Gauls? Who were the Dacians? Who were these other people that were living before the Romans invaded? Because it's not a case of the Romans took this civilization everywhere. They borrowed from what other people were doing all around the world. So, yeah, we have to just sort of bear these things in mind, that when we do these big clumpings in our heads of Roman periods, Egyptian period, anything else, that there are crossovers, there are back and forth. And as we are looking at today, if we ever actually get onto the topic, there are people outside of those spheres of influence as well.
Yeah, agreed. And what's interesting, you mentioned Cleopatra there. She was Cleopatra the VII of the Ptolemy dynasty. Now, most people, well, if you're listening to this, you probably have a passing understanding and interest in history, at least. And so you probably heard of Ptolemy. And that sounds very Egyptian to us, because the Ptolemy dynasty lasted centuries. But here's the thing. Ptolemy, the first guy, was one of Alexander the Great's generals. He was Greek, and his family was Greek, but they all became Egyptian in the eyes of the Egyptians. So you got a crossover of a previous civilization there, and the Romans really only got involved in Egypt just before the turn of, you know, from BC to AD, you know, sort of 30, 40 years maximum, they had power and sway over Egypt. And yet you can push back the times of ancient Egypt to about 3000 BC, maybe even further than that. And you know, the wonderful fact, and I might have used this before on the podcast, but it really sort of sticks with you. We are closer in time to Julius Caesar and Antony and Cleopatra. We are closer in time to those three people than those three people are to the building of the pyramids. That shows you how far back you have to go when you're talking about ancient Egyptian history. It really does sort of knock everything else around and then some in most areas, okay? But that's just ancient Egypt. We mentioned Persia, but of course the other big place, you said it sort of earlier on, it's like everybody talks about the Roman Empire. Well, they do in the West, but of course the Roman Empire never went anywhere near China. And when you look at the, now, apologies for the pronunciations here, but there's the Zhou dynasty. That starts about 1000 BC and runs up to about 200 BC, okay? Then you've got things like the Sui dynasty and the Six dynasties. There's a period of sort of civil war. All of this is contemporary with what you would consider classical Roman civilization. You can start talking about the Tang dynasty, but now we're in like the 900s, and so with the Western European, the Western Roman Empire's gone, but you've still got the Byzantines in the east. But look, you have got centuries of incredibly complex Eastern culture going on in China, which is every bit as impressive as the Romans. But it doesn't get the same credence because, as we've said before in this podcast, you can only teach so much history. And, you know, you can start getting into big arguments about why are we teaching everybody ancient Egyptian history? Yes, it's interesting, but really, what do the pyramids have to do with modern-day Britain? The answer is nothing. So maybe we should perhaps tell people about things like the Anglo-Saxons, which never get nearly as much love as the ancient Egyptians, but is, you know, part of the story of how England became England. We are named literally after the Angles. That's the first bit of Anglo-Saxon. Anyway, so of course, you know, we've only got a finite amount of time, and therefore when we talk about sort of like the Chinese emperors, they're all in our minds, all kind of lumped together. They're just old. We find it very hard to give dates to things. You know, we don't realize that there have been periods where China has been ruled by other civilizations. Kublai Khan is one of the most famous Chinese emperors, and he was Mongolian. He was a grandson of Genghis Khan. So yeah, you know, you've got all this other stuff going on in other civilizations, like China, like Persia. I'm going to come on to another one in a moment. But the more you look at it, the Romans simply weren't the only civilization around that was able to bind together different cultures and races and even religions. Although, interestingly, the Romans were, if you like, the last phase in Western Christianity, Western Europe, to not have to deal with Christianity, at least initially. And as soon as you got multiple gods, nobody argues about gods. You know, take the ancient Greeks and Romans. They both had a god of war. The Greeks called it Ares, the Romans called it Mars. But basically everybody agreed, well, there is a god of war. You call it potato, I call it potato kind of thing. Nobody argued about that. You didn't get religious wars. But once you got a group saying there's only one god, the rest of them don't work, then you got problems, which is why the Romans were incredibly vicious against the Jews. I know we talked about this in the Jerusalem one, okay? And they were initially incredibly vicious against the Christians as well, because it rocked the whole imperial boat. You know, you one of the things that binds everybody together is like, oh yeah, you believe this, I believe that. But as soon as you have to believe, that causes problems for an empire, because you're never going to get all your peoples to believe the same thing at the same time.
And it's actually sort of these separations, these real historical separations. We look at the Western and Eastern world, really kind of where we get these big divides, and you look at these different units, they filter through today, not just in the way we study history, because you're quite right with what you said there. We do a history podcast that's half hour every single week, and we have tried very hard, and I think in particular you have tried very hard to expand the podcast and make sure we don't just always come back to the same topics that everybody else touches on.
Here's Henry VIII again.
Well, here's Henry VIII again, here's the war again, and we touch on all of these things. And here's the problem we have. If we are going to do an episode about Henry VIII, suppose we want to do an episode about Henry VIII next week, we can sit down and we can talk about Henry VIII, and we can start by saying, right, okay, Henry VIII, Tudor King. Now let's get into some minutiae, let's get into some details, let's find some really interesting stories, something a bit off the beaten track about Henry VIII, something that we can really use to work with. If we decide to do, and we have done topics about sort of various different cultures, very different people from around the world, but as soon as we pick on somebody that's not known to the majority of our sort of our Western listeners, certainly, we then find ourselves in this situation of having to set the scene. And in a half hour podcast, if we're going to spend 15-20 minutes just telling you, suppose we had to, you know, we're going to do that same podcast about Henry VIII, except we've now got to spend the first 15-20 minutes setting up Henry VIII's background, explaining to you that he has six wives, explaining to you that he's part of this Tudor dynasty, this long-running Tudor dynasty, explaining how that's important, why that matters. We've got to take the time, because if I say Henry VIII or I say Tudors to people in Britain, you will immediately form a picture of exactly what time period I'm talking about. If I say to you Third Dynasty China, I think far, far fewer people in general, and I know myself included in this, far, far fewer of us will have an immediate image, an immediate point of reference in that. So again, to make any sort of interesting point about that, we kind of have to take the time to set up, oh, what do we actually mean by Third Dynasty China? What time period is it in? Are they dealing with stone tools? Are they dealing with iron tools? Have we moved on to modern era? Are we medieval? Where exactly do we fit in? And so I think that's part of it. But the way this filters down, and it's one of the things that I find really, really interesting, is the way this filters down even into things like juggling and magic. Because obviously that's how I look at the world. Because when we look at the tombs of Beni Hassan in ancient Egypt, that's generally held up to be where your first depiction of juggling occurs, and it is a man juggling three balls, and generally held to be that is some form of entertainer. And throughout ancient Greece and going into ancient Rome, juggling is held as entertainment, purely as entertainment, and that carries on to our Western notion. Juggling, magic, these are forms of entertainment. Juggling especially, it's a form of entertainment, it's a form of fun, but also because it's entertainment, because you're trying to entertain people and you're trying to show off, there's this whole thing of creation. You've got to create yourself. It's a well-known thing that if you go into a local magic club and you speak to several of the magicians there, if they think they can get away with it, they will convince you that they invented a deck of cards. You know, everybody in Western magic, everyone in Western juggling, so many people are pushing to be, I invented this trick. This is mine. I did this first. I'm the first person to juggle 100, I don't know, cats in the air while walking across a ravine. Anything, whatever they can, I'm the first. I'm the first. I'm the only one. I'm the only one. I'm the first to do this. Whereas over in China, looking at the same period as Romans, so Romans have got this, you know, a juggler is held up as a fool, a bit of an idiot, someone to be treated with a certain amount of disdain. Whereas over in China, we get one of the early famous Chinese jugglers, and I apologize every single time I talk about this particular person, Zhong Yilao, which I do apologize again to any Chinese listeners or anyone who knows how that should be pronounced. But Zhong Liao, he was a famous warrior from, he was in the period sort of around about 600 BC, somewhere like that. He was a famous warrior, and he was actually famous, and he is recorded in the annals of Chinese history. He is recorded for throwing multiple objects up and down without dropping them. Which, you know, I think that's pretty clear. That is a juggler. That is, well, okay, it's not what I do, but it's the idea of what a juggler is supposed to do, juggle things without dropping them. And there is the record of the battle in 603 BC, where he steps out in front of the armies and he juggles 9 objects. And the opposing army was so amazed by this. They were so stunned that someone could control this. I don't know if they thought it was magic, but the idea is that they immediately surrendered and left the battlefield because they weren't prepared to attack an army where one of the warriors came out and did this. And so this filters through time. So that's Romans. They have the idea of juggling is this low down comedy thing. Over in China, we have the idea of this great warrior actually using juggler to cast fear into the enemies and leave the battlefield. And that filters down into modern times, where we now have juggling very much in this country. It's still this silly, it's still quite, you know, still very, very, very basic level. You know, I always say, I'm lucky I'm a juggler, at least I can still look down on the mimes. You know, we have that hierarchy in juggler. Juggler is somewhere near the bottom. You know, it's fantastic, but it's somewhere near the bottom. And, you know, everyone's just... Whereas if you go to China and you see juggling and magic, and particularly magic, but juggling as well, not only are they doing a more refined act, not only is it treated with far, far more respect... But also, juggling and magic acts over, especially in China and various areas around there, it has this idea that you should be able to trace it back. So, whereas I will try and go on a stage, if I find a magic trick and I will try and come up with my own take on it, I'll find a juggling trick and I'll find my own take on it. Over in China, they will stand there and they will be performing the trick exactly as it has been performed. And they get a lot more credence by how far back can you trace exactly this presentation and exactly these words. I'm doing it the same as the person who taught me, who did it the same as the person who taught him, who did it the same as the person who taught him. And it's kind of like, even with a tiny little thing like juggling or magic, the fact that we see the Romans, we look back at that history, that is our line through the history. It seems so strange to sort of a Western audience, the idea that you would stand up on stage and do a magic trick that people have seen 100 times before, presented in exactly the same way, because that is the way that magic trick is done and that is the way it will always be done, as opposed to trying to present something new. And that all comes from this basic idea of this separation and the fact that at some point in history, the Romans were picked as the ones that we are going to teach about. And so that is what's going to follow through to modern day.
Wow, that was quite the journey you took us on there, Greg. I am also going to go off road, just for the record, because I did promise earlier, I said there's another civilization. It's worth mentioning, if we then go to Central America, the Aztecs came quite late, actually, but the early Mayan civilization overlaps with the late Western Roman Empire. So you're talking there about a civilization that was able to build very complex social structures and very complex construction sites as well. They did that without either horses or wheels. They had rollers, but they didn't have carts. So, and lots of slaves. They did also have lots of slaves to do this. So, the Mayan civilization, admittedly, most of what you see of the Mayan civilization is very late, but the very early stuff is actually contemporary with the Roman era. So it shows you there were lots of civilizations. The Rome did not have a monopoly on these things. But the way I wanted to go off road is, you reminded me that I'm in the middle of a spate of doing lots of talks about history. And I was doing one last week, and it's weird. I haven't done a talk about history for ages, and now I've got sort of 3 live events in about a week and a half. Such is life. Anyway, the one from last week, there was this woman, and one of her opening comments, it was a small group, and she said to me, she goes, "Oh, I don't really like history." Excellent. Great crowd I've got in front of me now, then. but she was very friendly about it. But then I started doing my spiel and things like that. And then I just happened to mention Mount Ararat in eastern Turkey. And she said, she goes, "I'm Christian." And she put her hand up and she goes, "You know, the ark is on the Noah's Ark is on Mount Ararat, and they found it. And every single person who has been able to get a sample of the cedar wood and conclusively prove that it's cedar wood has been killed by either I can't remember who the other one was, but either by the Turkish government or by other people, has been murdered. What do you say to that?"
Can I just say that
is an awesome heckle.
can I just say before you carry on the story, I know full well that, you know, and I know performers, the moment you said she came up to you and said, "I don't like history," you know, that's when normal people are starting to cringe. But performers are just going, "Nah, that's all right." It's when you get to the point, "I'm a Christian," and I think that was the point where people could probably feel me cringing for you over the airwaves here, because I knew where you were going to go. So you had this awesome heckle. What did you do? Just slam her down with a heckle put down, or?
No, you see, the thing is that I did not want to be impolite, but what I did say, I went, "Well, that's your view on it. I have a different view," and then went on with the actual thing I was talking about. But I would just like to say now, okay, look, whether you believe in Noah's Ark or not, that's irrelevant, okay? It doesn't tell you in the Bible what happened to Noah's Ark afterwards, but if you think about it for a moment, had the entire planet Earth been covered in water for 40 days, when it all receded, there would be no wood around, and Noah's Ark has served its purpose. So, just using basic logic, it wouldn't have been preserved as a testament to Noah. It would have been used for the new housing for the population of the world, and to presumably create sort of like pens to put all the pigs in and cows in and stuff like that. There's no reason it would preserve. Now, there is a weird rock formation on Mount Ararat, but it is a rock formation. There is no cedar wood there. Nobody I'm aware of has been executed around this. There are lots of crazy conspiracy theories around it. That is the craziest one I've actually heard, and it actually came from somebody I was talking to rather than the internet. And I encourage you to look, regardless, just use some basic logic on this. Forget about the, people start slamming the whole story. Put that to one side. When Noah finished, he's clearly going to use the ark for other reasons. It served its purpose. That makes no logical sense whatsoever. Then yes, if you want to get into the whole story, that doesn't make an awful lot of sense either, but that's for another day. Just had to share that with you, Greg. You know, you've had your heckles. Sometimes I get my weird historical heckles too, and I guess we're basically at the end here. So is there anything you want to wrap up with?
I'm not sure I can. I'm still enjoying that.
I know that was just weird.
I mean, we all enjoy it when somebody else gets a really, really good. And like you say, it's the heckles that you just can't answer. It's always said one of the worst heckles you can ever deal with is somebody shouting out repeatedly, "I really love your show," because you've got nothing you can do. But I mean, that is a fantastic heckle. I do like that one. I do just want to apologize to everybody listening, because, you know, I thought that me and Jem ran a, you know, the reason we do this podcast is because we're not beholden to anyone. We can say what we want. We have, and I do apologize for the fact that it does sound like Jem has been influenced by the Men in Black, who are trying to cover up the fact that there is actually a cedarwood ark up on the mountain. So I do apologize that his freedom of speech, and he's now spreading this falsehood about it just being a pile of rocks or people breaking apart a boat to make homes. I mean, as if that sort of thing would happen. Actually, I had a review.
Thanks, Greg.
I had a review the other day. You might like, Jeff. just while we've got completely off topic. I did one of our fossil trips, and we had a school group down, and we finished up the fossil trip, and I'm walking back to the coach and with all the school children, and one of the children came over to me, and I think this might go on our advertising for next year, Jem, because this kid comes over to me and he says, "Do you know, that wasn't as boring as I thought it was going to be."
Excellent.
It's not as boring that I like. Anyway, I think we've kind of drifted our way so far off topic that I don't think even an arc will get us back to shore. So, Jem, shall we wrap up this little podcast? Do you have something you want to plug?
Yeah, I'm going to just quickly jump in there about, I have another podcast called Neon. That's sort of just all me. I talk about pop culture and then say, hey, look, there's some real history behind it. Done some interesting ones recently. Even managed to do one on Love Island, which I'm quite proud of. So if you like this, you want a bit more, check out Neon Podcast. And that's me done. You, Greg?
Well, I might as well just give my other podcast a quick plug. That's Greg Chapman's Tales from the Road. It went on a brief hiatus before the event that happened last week, which Jim told me I'm not allowed to mention again. So now the wedding's over, we can carry on, and that is back up and running again. And also, I have been listening to some of Jim's podcast, Neon. It is a fantastic podcast, well worth listening to. I'm looking forward. My main podcast listening time is over the summer when I'm traveling a lot for shows, so I'm looking forward to catching up on that as well. Just one little plug that I'd like to try and get from you, Jem, if it's possible at all. You did mention that you started doing a few more history talks, a run of history talks. Are these history talks anywhere where it's possible for public to go and see them, or are they for private places?
Thank you for the build up there, Greg. The answer is no. They're as and when. They're for things like church groups and stuff like that. Hence the Christian thing. Although, interestingly, that wasn't actually at the church group one. Anyway. No, I don't really have anything sort of like big to talk about at the moment.
Well, hopefully at some point, because I know you've done a couple of talks, book launched and things. So hopefully at some point I do want to get along and see a Jem the Duchu history talk, because I know that you've been along to see a couple of my shows. But that is our plugs for the moment now then. So all I can say now is thank you very much to every single one of you that is listening. You do us a massive deal of help. Please continue to review and share around the podcast. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem the Duchu.
And to my wonderful co-host, Greg Chapman.
And for now, that is the end of the podcast. We'll be back on Friday with a shorter episode and next Tuesday with another longer episode. But for now, goodbye and take care.